Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. A common complaint among baseball purists is that today's teams have 25 cabs for 25 guys, which is to say that the camaraderie that made players brothers in the era of train rides from city to city has been replaced by free agency, trades, and million-dollar contracts. So it's fitting that the unexpected friendship between two old-school Yankees is at the heart of New York Times sports columnist Harvey Ayrton's new book. Except the pitcher and catcher are a quarter century apart in years, never played together, and go months without seeing each other until spring training dawns anew. The pitcher is Louisiana Lightning, Ron Guidry, the catcher Yogi Berra, the greatest living Yankee. Both long retired, their unlikely kinship was forged when Guidry decided Berra deserved to be picked up at the airport by a friendly face before settling in for another February of drills. It led to a father-son type bond, with Guidry serving as chauffeur, dinner guest, and advocate for the Hall of Famer, Berra. Ayrton's book is Driving Mr. Yogi, Yogi Berra, Ron Guidry, and Baseball's Greatest Gift, which is published by Houghton Mifflin. Harvey Ayrton, welcome to the Roundtable.
Pleasure to be here.
How did you find out about this relationship in the first place? This was originally a newspaper story.
Yeah, it was basically by chance. I happened to live in the same town in northern New Jersey, Montclair, as Yogi Berra and much of his family. And I happened to have an old friend who was a former colleague at the New York Daily News back in the late 1980s named Dave Kaplan, who was also now the director of the Berra Museum, which opened in 1999 on the campus of Montclair State University. And a year ago, February, we were out to dinner one night, and I was heading down to spring training within a few days. And I just casually asked Dave if Yogi was going down too, knowing that Yogi always went to spring training for 3 or 4 weeks. And he said, yeah, he was going down a few days after I was. But then I was curious about, you know, Yogi at that point was 85, turning 86. The previous summer, he had taken a bad spill outside his home, and we knew he'd slowed down. So I wondered, when Yogi goes to spring training, if his wife Carmen would go with him to make sure that he was okay, or if he had an attendant. And Dave stopped, looked at me and said, you know, it's an interesting story that no one's ever really written about. And he went on to tell me about Guidry and the companionship, which had really kind of grown into sort of being a caretaker as well, given the fact that Yogi, you know, was now in his mid-80s. And he also had a cap made up that said Driving Mr. Yogi, and it became his golfing cap. So when I got down to Tampa, I interviewed Guidry. He was initially reluctant because he is more or less a private man, and he felt the relationship between him and Berra was something between them. But when I mentioned that I had, you know, spoken to Yogi and his wife Carmen about it and that I knew the family well, he loosened up. The story wound up on the front page of the Times, and the response to it was so overwhelmingly positive from all around the country, not just from Yankee fans, that the natural thing to do seemed to be to expand it into a book.
Why did Guidry take it upon himself to become that caretaker when, okay, so Yogi is a little older and maybe he needs some help getting around and that kind of thing. Ron Guidry is one of the great Yankee pitchers of all time. It doesn't seem that likely that that would fall to him necessarily.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this would be kind of a fun story, even if the guy doing the chauffeuring and the dinner nights out was just a member of the clubhouse crew or something like that. But the fact that it's Ron Guidry, who is not a Hall of Fame pitcher, but is mighty close and is one of the great Yankee pitchers of all time, the fact that he's doing it makes it really unique and interesting. And the backstory on it is that Ron Guidry grew up in the Cajun country of Louisiana, and his mother was a huge Yankee fan. Remember, back in those days, there was no baseball really in that part of the country. This was the mid to late 1950s, and so his mother became a Yankee fan, and she would sit on the couch in the living room of their home in Lafayette, Louisiana, and Ron would watch. He was an only child at that time. He would watch Yankee games that were on national TV. So when Ron got to New York in the mid-1970s, the names Berra, Ford, and Mantle were really special to him. And, you know, being a Yankee, young Yankee pitcher in the mid-1970s, that was pretty much the dawn of the George Steinbrenner era. So So that was fraught with peril. I mean, you know, one day you could go out there as a young pitcher, give up a couple of hits and wind up back in the minor leagues or out of the organization completely. And Guidry experienced those issues. He, you know, was sent up and down several times. One time he actually decided to quit the Yankees and got in the car with his wife to drive home until she talked him out of it, and then he turned around and went back to Syracuse, which was the minor league outlet. So in those days, it just happened to be whenever Guidry was at Yankee Stadium, his locker was pretty much right next door to Yogi's, and Yogi kind of took Guidry under his wing. You know, he talked to him a lot. He helped him simplify the game, don't think too much, which is Yogi's MO. And for a young Yankee pitcher trying to deal with all those distractions and all that pressure, that was a great piece of advice for Guidry. So there was an affection and a mentorship that started way back when, in the 70s. So when Yogi actually returned to spring training after his 14-year self-exile following his dismissal as manager by Steinbrenner through an intermediary, Yogi returned to Tampa, where the Yankees had relocated to from Fort Lauderdale. And obviously, Guidry just sensed that this was going to be a difficult re-entry for Berra. A lot of the familiar faces, the places that he was used to were gone. So he volunteered to pick him up at the airport, and the friendship kind of picks up from there.
One thing that comes through is just how regimented Yogi Berra is. He likes to have a schedule, stick to it, not be late, eat in the same five restaurants, and know where he's going at all times. Why is he like that?
Well, you know, it would be easy to say that we all know somebody who is 86, turning 87 next month, who is set in his ways, who, you know, likes things done a particular way and wants to be here at this particular hour. But I think with Yogi, it's fair to say that he's been like this for pretty much his entire life. And we all have our theories about it. I mean, as you know, Carmen tells you that if Yogi, and the way Yogi's always been, if the doctor says, Yogi, you know, take this medicine at 5 o'clock before dinner, Yogi at 10 to 5 is unwrapping the bottle or taking the top off the bottle and getting ready to lay out his pill, so he takes it exactly at that time. But, you know, my theory is that Yogi had severe handicaps in terms of becoming a great major leaguer. Anyone who looks at him, I mean, he's lost a couple of inches in height, but Yogi was never a big, imposing man. Most people doubted that Yogi would ever make the major leagues. You know, many people kind of laughed at him when he played in the minor leagues. You know, who is this guy? He was a short, squat man, didn't look like a big, strong athlete. So my guess is that one of Yogi's strengths was his ability to do things in a precise way. And, you know, once you develop those habits, that this is the way you succeed, you probably start to stick to them. That's my theory anyway, from, you know, knowing his family, talking to his sons. This is the way he's always been. So my guess is it's always been part and parcel of his success.
There's a portion of the book that deals with Yogi and Nick Swisher, who have come to be very close. Swisher's a current outfielder for the Yankees, a kind of a slugger, and Yogi has given him a piece of advice in spring training to make him move up in the batter's box. Yogi was really welcomed back to the Yankees in a lot of ways because of the fact that it was a Torrey administration. Joe Torrey was of the same generation, more or less, and his bench coaches were as well. But I wonder, is there enough taking advantage of what Yogi Berra knows by the current crop, the Girardi administration, and the players on his bench now?
Well, I think it's a difficult question. Certainly when Yogi first returned to the team in spring training of 2000, you know, he was there as a legitimate guest instructor. He was 74, but he was still spry. He was still active. He was in uniform on the field every day. He was down there for the entire spring camp. And he worked specifically with Jorge Posada, who was someone who was lacking in confidence. And Yogi did a lot of the things for Posada that Bill Dickey had done for Yogi. I think as time has gone on and Yogi is, you know, diminished, it becomes a gray area. And, you know, Yogi as an older man sometimes will hold back. I mean, the Swisher incident on the bench, you know, he was watching Swisher hit and struggling in spring training. This was in 2010. And he made a comment to Guidry that, you know, he needs to step up in the box to handle that breaking pitch. And Guidry said, what are you telling me for? Tell him. And Yogi went, nah, he's got coaches. And this was a sign to Guidry that Yogi was beginning to surrender to, you know, the fragility of old age. And it bothered Guidry. I mean, this is someone he loves Yogi, and he is so devoted to him. And so he took it upon himself. When Swisher came back to the bench, Guidry stood up in his path and said, pointed at Yogi and said, "He wants to talk to you." And Yogi's eyes widened, and Swisher sat down. Swisher's a very good guy. He sat down. Yogi gave him a little bit of advice. Whether it was coincidence or not, Swisher went up to the plate next at bat, doubled into the gap, you know, pointed at Yogi in the dugout, and actually went on to have one of his better statistical seasons. But as Guidry says in the book, whether it had something to do with what Yogi told him or not wasn't really the point. The point was that Yogi was able to assert himself, to be part of it, to make himself feel that he wasn't just there as a family heirloom. He was there as someone who contributed. And we all know somebody in our, we all have somebody in our lives, and a parent, a grandparent, maybe an older sibling, that we're trying to do the same things for. And that's why I feel this story is very touching and poignant. And in the end, though Yogi is depicted a little differently than in the past, a little pricklier, you know, a little crankier, but ultimately comes out even more endearing.
You can't get past the fact that this would be a much different and sadder story had he never come back to the Yankees. I mean, I was reading this book just trying to picture a world in which he hadn't been back at the stadium over the past 15 years. If Steinbrenner had never gone to New Jersey to make up with Yogi, this is so important to him, and it really keeps him going, it seems.
Well, I think it worked for both people in an extraordinary way. We know what it's done for Yogi. You know, his sons and even Carmen began to work on him, you know, in the years before Steinbrenner came to apologize. But Yogi was stubborn and, you know, and was sticking to his guns and had vowed that he would never go back and as long as Steinbrenner owned the team. The sons would say, but Dad, you know, your grandkids will never see you in pinstripes. They'll never see you in Yankee Stadium. Do you really want them to grow up without experiencing that?" And Yogi would, you know, it would bother him a little bit, but ultimately would say, "No, I'm not going back there." It wasn't until Susan Waldman, who is a broadcaster for the Yankees now, but at that time she was a reporter for WFAN, the sports station in New York, and she was close to George. And when Yogi's museum on the campus of Montclair State was opening, she had this brainstorm to conduct a show in conjunction with the opening of the museum and have George fly in from Tampa and actually beg Yogi's forgiveness. She thought, you know, George might hang up the phone, but George was ready. I think that was the key. George was ready for a reconciliation, and maybe it had something to do with the fact that Mickey Mantle had died, Joe DiMaggio was gravely ill, and George, not only being, you know, a bit of a softy at heart, but also being a good businessman, understood that Yogi was good for business if he came back to Yankee Stadium. So he came up from Tampa and he did the apology, and in the end, it helped put a softer face on the Yankee franchise as a whole, because it's easy to portray the Yankees as a team that buys this and buys that, but having Yogi Berra around, you know, every spring training, and Yogi also is around the stadium quite a bit. He goes to the first game of every home series. Certainly helped Steinbrenner soften his image as he was aging at the same time.
The name of the book is Driving Mr. Yogi, Yogi Berra, Ron Guidry, and Baseball's Greatest Gift. We've been speaking with Harvey Ayrton, and I really appreciate the time you've taken to tell us about this fascinating story today. Thank you so much.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.